It's Monday. I'm Gab. He's Jules. And we have a show for you. We're going to talk a little bit about Milan, top of the table in Serie A, with that golden oldie, Benjamin Button, Ibrahimovic. Yeah. And we'll have plenty of quick hits, lots of stuff going on. Barca dropping points again, but maybe not to worry. But we're going to start with Arsenal and Manchester United. Jules, it's the clash which I think defined the 2000s for many people. And Arsenal come out on top. I'm going to go right out and say this. We made the point, hey, Ollie, go with a diamond. Try to put some more of your better players on the pitch. It can work. And it did work against Leipzig.
Yeah.
And PSG. We all waxed lyrical, and against PSG. And then they play Arteta, and Arteta takes that diamond and says, yeah, this is a cubic zirconia. Let me go and crush it. Okay, I don't want to go too far into this, but if you can have a great setup, but if you don't execute it properly, and if the other guy is smarter than you and wipes the floor with you tactically, as happened on Sunday, there's not what you can do, right?
Yeah, I mean, no, you can always change something through the game, and they didn't, or Solskjaer didn't.
But it doesn't mean the diamond is the wrong idea.
No.
His execution of it is bad.
And I'm not even sure there was ever a diamond in that team. And he looks to me, and I was at the ground, and I was really close to the pitch, and I can see so well that there was not much structure to the United team. I don't know exactly what the game plan was. I don't know what the idea
was.
Well,
tell us about this, because you were there. I was only watching on TV. Bruno Fernandes looked to be playing further up the pitch behind Greenwood and Rashford. Fine. And then what was up with the other three guys? Pogba was in some sort of center left.
Yeah, I mean, it looked like it really looked at times that he was a 4-2-3-1 with McTominay and Fred sitting, and then Pogba left.
And nobody right.
And then Greenwood sometimes right. I mean, he was drifting a bit. There was a bit of fluidity first, which I thought, okay, let's give it a go. Maybe, you know, Solskjaer said to the players, let's move along, let's do this, because Arsenal are so structured and they're so well organized that maybe to trouble them, you need a lot of movement and players being hard to pick and hard to mark. But he didn't resemble anything. There was just nothing at United that I can tell you, okay, that's interesting what they're doing there. No, you know what United's plan was from where I was? It was like when you're at school and you're playing on the school playground at break time and you pick two teams, and then your tactic is like, okay, let's give the ball to our best player and then let's see what he can do. That was exactly how United were playing. That's exactly what they were, like kids at school saying, like, okay, let's give the ball to Bruno Fernandes and then see what happens. Let's give the ball to Marcus Rashford and see what happens. There was just nothing else.
On television, it looked messy. I certainly got the impression that a lot of this had to do with the fact that I thought Arsenal pressed very, very effectively.
Yeah.
Elneny and Thomas Partey, super effective in that role. They pressed at the right time. They pressed in the right areas. They got plenty of help. Bellerin and Saka, a lot of times coming inside to help out. They were hugely disruptive.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if that is ultimately what United couldn't deal with, because, you know, we always talk about playing through the press, progressing the ball. I just felt like they couldn't get out except with that ball over the top, which, by the way, I mean, I think with a bit more luck, that ball over the top is always going to be effective if you have Rashford and Greenwood up there. Would it have been better if he'd used Fred differently, maybe? I mean, Fred...
Yeah, maybe.
Theoretically, is supposed to be a deeper-lying playmaker. I mean, the old Fred, before he came to United, that's kind of what he did. But he just couldn't move the ball.
Yeah, and I mean, in the first half, it was very clear that Elneny was on Bruno Fernandes and Partey was on Pogba. That was it. Almost man-marking as soon as United had the ball, okay? We all saw it. Why don't you say, okay, this is not working because Partey and Elneny, as you said, are really good on our two best players. Let's do something different. But nothing never happened. There was just nothing. And Pogba said after the game, he said, they blocked us and we could not find solutions. We should have done more to find... Well,
now, you spoke to Pogba individually after the game, right?
Yeah.
And that was basically his sense. Was it more about praising Arsenal or maybe lamenting, in addition to his own big mistake, which we'll get to in a minute, lamenting the fact that...
He said we should have found solutions. We clearly could see the problem because they were they were blocking us well, and they were well organized. And then we didn't do enough. We could not find any solutions. We couldn't find the answers to the problem that we had in front of us. And it's just not good enough. He said, it's not good enough for me personally, he said, from the whole team. You can't have four games at Old Trafford and not winning one, being 15th in the table. This is embarrassing. They've got 7 points after seven games. David Moyes had 7 points after seven games.
Right,
he didn't finish the 13th, 14th. No, but it's true. At some point, right. It's true.
I think the difference is that, you know, Pogba will be blamed for everything, and obviously the penalty entirely his fault.
Of course, I think he knew that,
Bellerin clearly not going anywhere.
Where do you stand on Pogba saying that he had been running so much defensively that he was a bit out of breath, and people saying that it's a rubbish excuse?
You know what? I think people who say that are complete idiots. I want a player to explain to me when he makes a mistake, when he has a chance to reflect on it, what went wrong. He's not making an excuse. He's making an explanation.
Yeah.
He knows full well that the fact that he was running around, he said maybe I was a little bit out of breath, whatever, I mistimed it. I welcome that.
I agree.
And we in the media have a responsibility not to go and crucify players for telling us how they screwed up. Like, oh, you're making excuses. You're out of breath. Oh, poor baby. Oh, Brian Robson would have never said that. Well, you know what? I don't care. Brian Robson played, who's one of my all-time favorites, Captain Marvel. He played in a different era.
Yeah.
I want players. And you know what? They're not going to give you explanation. They're just going to hide behind cliches and say nothing like so many players do. Mm. But just to wrap this, this is a win for Arsenal, I think, more than it was a defeat for United. I've been critical at times of Arteta, as you know. I don't like their long-term squad building and whatever else. But on the day, Arteta showed that he can be a tremendous manager, not just when it comes to creating chances and whatever, and we view him as like, oh, beautiful football city, but also at completely neutralizing and being pretty ruthless.
Yeah, I agree. It's his win. First win at Old Trafford in 14 years. First win against a top six for 5 years, 29 games or something. But they were so well structured. He guided them so well on the pitch. You know, he never stopped shouting, never stopped talking, encouraging, replacing. I thought he was brilliant. And it might not work even every game, as we saw against Leicester, for example. He would have to find other solutions. But on the day, yesterday, Sunday, it worked.
Jules, should we spend a little more time with our beloved podcast listeners just to delve into this in a slightly more intimate setting? I mean, we've praised Arteta's tactics. Mm. One thing that struck me was, obviously, if you play a diamond or play narrow or whatever you want to talk, whichever you want to describe it, ordinarily the fullbacks have to play a big part. Yeah. And this, we had flagged this from the start, that this is going to be problematic because Aaron Wan-Bissaka is not Dani Alves. Luke Shaw, who I thought was a very attacking fullback earlier in his career, obviously isn't that in the same way anymore. And people, you know, I saw Roy Keane on television, oh, they have no width. I'm like, okay. But a lot of teams have played the diamond throughout history and they still manage to get width, even without tremendous attacking fullbacks, because the front men move wide.
Yeah.
You develop patterns of play around that. Bruno Fernandes can go wide and collect and provide.
Greenwood can go wide.
Who?
Greenwood can go wide.
Mason Greenwood, and he did a little bit. Why didn't we see this? I mean, I'm not going to make excuses for Solskjaer because I'm tired of that.
Please don't, because he doesn't deserve any excuses.
But I do think, especially this year, if you are going to go through a change in system, you need to work on it on the pitch. Playing a diamond isn't straightforward for a lot of people, especially at this club. And you have to work on your pattern. And teams don't have time to train. It's almost like trial and error.
I know, but you could still...
On top of that, he's not very good, in my opinion, as a coach. And everything breaks down. When you have somebody who's not great to begin with, and on top of that, he doesn't have time to work.
Yeah.
That's the outcome.
Of course. Yeah, of course. You're right. However, you should still be able, with those players, to see more collectively than what you saw, regardless of this formation, regardless of the tactics or how you play a diamond midfield or not. You should see more.
But you're talking about, when you talk about that, you're talking about, you have superstar individuals like Pogba, like Rashford, like Bruno Fernandes. They should be able to go and do something individual. And on this day, it didn't happen. Is that what you're saying?
As a team, collectively, you should see more. You should see more of a pattern of play, even in a different system. You should see more passing. I mean, they were never dangerous. The chance for Greenwood is the only one because they played that free kick quickly, and Arsenal were a bit caught off guard, I think. And then that great ball from Rashford to Greenwood, but that's it. The rest of the time, they did. And then at the end, because they threw long balls on in the box and stuff like that. But that was it. There was nothing. There was never three passes together going forward. There was never any triangles. There was just nothing.
What also struck me a little bit about that is, all right, Harry Maguire is playing better than he was playing before, which isn't saying much. But part of this guy's strength is he's a good passer.
Yeah.
If you can't get out of your half because the other team are pressing you so effectively, why not use Maguire as an extra passer in the build-up? I did feel as if, you know, United recover the ball,
yeah,
goes to the fullbacks, into Fred and McTominay, who freak out, look for Pogba and Bruno Fernandes, and then they lose the ball single time.
Or Fred and Bruno and Pogba have to drop so deep that it's pointless.
Why not involve Maguire? You know the guy can pass. I mean, I wonder if there's a confidence issue there, that maybe Maguire still feels I need to play myself back to form. Or
this is a great point that you're making. And what does Solskjaer do? He brings on Matic. And what does Matic do? Every time, no, but it's true. Every time United have the ball, he drops between the two centre-backs. And then the ball comes to him. And so you nullify, again, Maguire's ability to push up with the ball, pass the ball, etc. So he just, and I don't want to go on and on about Solskjaer, because that's not the idea. He's, as we've said before, that was his 100th game. He had some really good performances, some really, really bad ones, some average one. I'm still not really sure if he's good, if he's any good or not. But Atho on Sunday, he just got everything wrong. Everything wrong.
No, we don't want to be too negative. We said we've praised Arteta before.
Yeah.
What I wonder, I mean, my view is what we're seeing, this 3-4-3, works so great there with this personnel.
Yeah.
This is not
against
a blueprint.
Against that opposition.
Against that opposition. Yeah. This is not a blueprint.
No.
Because when you play against somebody else who, you know, is happy to play without the ball and parks a bus.
Leicester.
Yeah, you can't play Partey and Nani together in midfield and expect the same result. I know people have been talking about Partey like he's a phenomenon, like he's Patrick Vieira. He's not Patrick Vieira. Thomas Partey's 27. He's a very, very good player at what he does.
Yeah.
He's in those games, you're going to need creativity, and you still want Partey in there. So I would presume we'll see Partey and Ceballos, or maybe Partey and Xhaka.
Yeah, I think he's got three options. Partey, Xhaka, Partey, Elneny, Partey, Ceballos. Well, you can always, if you want, put Willock there or whatever for certain games. But I think those three are the three pairs that you can use in there, depending on your position, right. Very much, because Partey,
Elneny. Common thread, Partey's always there.
I think Partey's always there.
I agree.
He's the one who's always there. And then, depending on who you play against, if you play home or away, then you have another one next to it. Xhaka and his left foot for the passing. Ceballos for the passing forward with his right foot and a bit more skills maybe than the other three. Elneny United plays so much into Arsenal's hands and so much into what Elneny and Partey were good at that it was very easy. And I thought Elneny had an incredible game until the last minute. He was pressing and running and he's intelligent. He's such a good guy as well that it worked perfectly for that. But I don't think Elneny and Partey would work that well against, like you said, a team that comes to the Emirates, sit really deep and hit you really fast on the counter-attack, for example.
You
need more passing ability, more creativity there.
I think, again, I said this earlier, but we have to credit, just a reminder about, I love it when managers come in, they inherit players who've been up or down or whatever, and they say, you know what, to quote Bruce Springsteen, you ain't a beauty, but hey, you're all right.
Yeah.
I'm going to make this happen. I'm going to make you contribute. You know, 6 months ago, Mohamed Elneny was a guy at Fenerbahce who wasn't getting paid. Six months ago, I don't know if it was a rare moment where Rob Holding wasn't injured, but, you know, the dude feels like, it's not his fault, he's been injured,
course,
whatever. Nobody's going to mistake him for the second coming, but he's turned these guys into productive players.
Yeah.
The reinvention of Kieran Tierney as a left-sided centre-back.
Yeah.
I interprets a position in a certain way, and he's got Saka. This is really good stuff.
This is good
and
stuff.
I've been critical of Arteta certain times because he's still a very young manager. It's, you know, young age-wise as well.
Yeah.
But he's doing a very good job there. What I'm not 100% on right now is a situation with, I know that front three worked because they're veteran players and it's a big game and they're good players. But are you getting the best out of Alba, using him in that way?
I think it's a really good debate. You know, I think before yesterday, touched the ball 16 times in the Premier League. All season, including the first game where he scored. That's not enough. Not for a finisher, such a clinical finisher like
he is. Not for a guy where you've mortgaged the future on him.
And someone you've just given a new contract. So they have to find a way of involving him more in the last 30 yards in the box. I thought yesterday you saw already a bit of that because it was a bit short on the cross from Bellerin. There's that shot when that just goes wide.
He had a back heel to set somebody up.
Yeah, Willian, when he goes centrally and make that run after they recovered the ball quite high. So it looks like there's progress. They're certainly working out training to get him even more. But the thing is, if you play him centrally with what Arteta is asking, that he's number nine, like Lacazette, you press for 80% of the game, you press. That's all you do. You press. And then for 20% of the game, you play. And I'm not sure if Aubameyang can do that. So maybe you play him left because you know that it would be crazy to put him centrally and having him to press all the time like Lacazette does. Lacazette spends so much time pressing. It's crazy. But that's what Arteta wants his number nine to do. So, I don't know, find a way of getting the best of Aubameyang wide. And he did score a lot last season in that position. Arteta is right.
It's interesting. I like to say that, you know, in the modern game on most teams, fullback is not a defensive position. I'd go further and say, with certain types of managers, center forward is not an attacking position.
Yeah.
You know, you can go and you can be really valuable to the team, as Lacazette was yesterday, without necessarily being that much of an attacking force, because I know he scored a lot of goals in the past, but you know, Lacazette is limited, I think, offensively compared to Aubameyang anyway.
Yeah.
So
different story. But for example, yesterday when all the players were leaving the pitch, and you know you have to go into the corner for the tunnel at Old Trafford, it's not like normal grounds, and Arteta was, you know, high-fiving all his players and stuff like that, and then Lacazette had been subbed off, so he was in a different, he was already towards the tunnel, and Arteta was like, Laka, and Lacazette was the guy he gave the biggest hug, and Lacazette didn't score, didn't create, didn't get the penalty, but I think Arteta recognized and acknowledged with him, like, all the work that you do off the ball by just pressing, and it can't be much fun. I mean, I love Lacazette, but it can't be, you know, chasing the ball all the time, running, pressing, coming back, and you could hear Arteta all the time, Laka, he speaks to him in French, Laka, go there, Laka, do this, Laka, go and press, Laka, go and press, Laka, go and press. And, you know, if you're number nine and you love scoring goals, but now your job is 80% more of just pressing all the time.
I wonder how that one's going to play out, because obviously Lacazette is another one who is on big money and has his contract who's winding down. You know, maybe Eddie Nketiah can do the same thing. Maybe that's Arteta's hoping that, you know, I'm not going to need Laka. But if you need to renew that contract as well, man, I don't know. But that's all right. We've covered all that. I think right now, today's the day to celebrate Arteta and Arsenal, because they were phenomenal. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million dollar stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify is your no excuses business partner. Sell without needing to code or design. Just bring your best ideas and Shopify will help you open up shop. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Because businesses that grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjules, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjules now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/gabjules. All right, Jules, I didn't want to get carried away with this to all the Milanisti out there. I said, let's wait. Surely they'll drop off. Something will happen. The travel, Ibrahimovic, COVID. But no, they're still top of the table. They beat Udinese 2-1 at the weekend. Zlatan Ibrahimovic gets the headlines because he sets up Frank Kessie's first goal. And then it's an overhead kick at the end to win it. Now, I use the term lightly because technically it was an overhead kick. Yeah. If you see it, it's more like, you know, like Mr. Stretch putting his foot way up into the air and falling backwards, but they all count. Milan are top. They're ahead of the curve.
They are. And I think they're serious, right? The way they play, I don't think Ibra will. I mean, Ibra can't keep that form the whole season. It's impossible. I mean, he's got 7 goals in 7 games, 6 games.
I think he's also started like 5 games in a row.
No one has scored
like
more than him since the restart of last season. He's been incredible. He said, you know, you are not Zlatan, don't take on the virus, don't do like me kind of thing. I mean, all the punchlines are great, all the goals are great, all the performances, but there would be a time where it would be a bit off. And then we will have to see if Rafael Leao, if Rebic, whoever else can take over and keep scoring the goals. But I still think that they're well organised. I think they've got a very, very good midfield. Bennacer, Kessié, Tonali at some point will become good. You can even move to a 3 in midfield. Wow, I'm just like, I was really impressed. Not so much by the performance at the weekend because it was not their best games, but they still found a way of winning a 7 minutes from time. I just like the character they show. I like the structure that they have. And then when you've got Ibra in that kind of form, it's just like, wow.
And despite Ibra, they're one of the youngest teams in Europe as well. So there is an upside. You know, going forward, they'll need to make a big decision on Gigi Donnarumma's contract at some point. What's really impressed me about Pioli is that, you know, teams that have, I've always said this, teams that have Ibrahimovic tend to play bad football. It might be successful football. They play bad football because he's so big, he's so dominant, he's so talented that you just end up lumping the ball to him continuously. And that's a huge temptation. This Milan team, maybe for the first time, I didn't see much of the Galaxy. I'm assuming they were pretty Ibra dependent.
Yeah, I think so.
This is not a team that's Ibra dependent. In other words, he's important to them, but they have so many other solutions. And at the same time, I think Ibra's mentality has changed, where, yes, it's still all about him, but he doesn't always need the ball. He will make the decoy run. He will look to set up teammates.
Yeah.
They have so much speed, so much energy, whether it's Brahim Diaz, whether it's Theo Hernandez, we saw from Casillejo, Rafael Leao. There's so much drive there, so many different ways for them to score, that it's almost like Pioli's developed like an Ibra plan B, you know, where Ibra's a part of it. You're right. The big question is what happens when Ibra needs to take a break? And what happens if Ibra has another sort of, you know, Ibra megalomaniac moment, which we've seen happen in the past? I'm going to go out on a limb and guess that, you know, I think he turned 39 in October.
Yeah.
He views every day that he's on the pitch as a gift. And he says, if I want to keep playing, I need to be good. Zlatan.
But do you think there's a parallel to make between him and Cristiano? They're very different players, but in the sense where Cristiano at some point realized that, okay, maybe I need to do a bit less on the pitch to do more, to have more goals. And that Ibra, I mean, I saw him for 4 years in Paris where he really wanted to do everything. He still thought he could do what he did at Ajax and drop deep and get the ball and dribble past 6 players and then score. You know, that, but he can't do that anymore. And do you think that there's a parallel maybe, again, very different players, but a sense of, okay, if I reinvent myself a little bit on what I can do and what I'm good at, then I keep just doing that and then I will have success.
I think it's a tempting parallel. I think it's definitely something to look at, and obviously especially after this weekend with Cristiano's performance. I don't think Cristiano is there yet. I don't think he needs to be in that situation where Ibra is. You know, I think Cristiano has a role for himself within the team. He's still the main man, but he doesn't need to necessarily put himself at the service of the team the way Ibra does.
Yeah.
I just think he's in a different space mentally. But I think what we're seeing is this is really interesting, the way they've built the team. I think if they're still in this position, there's no doubt in my mind, they'll look to reinforce in January as well. Mm. And man, for the first time in forever, it looks as if, you know, the sun is shining on the red and black side of Milan.
You know, we talked earlier about how Arteta made some of his players improve so much, you know, and we named a few. But if you look at Pioli and, I don't know, some of the players that he currently has in his team, 6 months ago or a year ago, I know Theo Hernandez had a really good season, but he was still, when he signed for Milan, I think a lot of people thought, okay, but
you're rolling the dice on a guy who's got discipline issues.
What kind of Theo are we going to see? You know, players like even Frank Kessié to a certain extent, but many others in that team looked so much better now after working a year with Pioli, let's say, more or less, than they were a year ago, no?
Yeah, I think Pioli, like I said it when he was appointed, Pioli was a perfect fit for this team because A, he likes working with young players, and B, he is just an old school on the football pitch coach. He knows every formation. He's played every formation. If the club want to play a certain way, and there are instructions from the club, they've bought into. I know Ralf Rangnick didn't come in, but yeah. I think philosophically they've given some of the people behind the scenes there. They've bought into that German, if you want to call it that, model of, you know, pressing high, a lot of youth, a lot of energy, and so on. Which, you know, you figure Ibra has nothing to do with.
Yeah,
right? But Pioli's found a way to make it work. And Pioli can embrace that type of football. He has played that type of football. The reason Pioli is not an A-list coach is that he doesn't have the personality to do that. Somebody once put it to me, he's too nice a guy. Yeah. He doesn't have that little bit of
He looks like that.
Bit of dirty in him, right? Yeah. He's, you know, his critics say he's a pushover, right? But I think in some ways, maybe that's what this club needed right now. And you're right. Individuals, I think, have really blossomed under him. And I think it's also credit to the club that so far they've been able to kind of keep things together, that they've been able to, you know, because we talked last year about the split. And even though they've denied it and whatever, there obviously was a split between some people at the club, who are still there, who think that, you know, we need to spend money, we need to get veterans help us win. You know, the reason Gattuso left in the first place was that Gattuso, after that season where he finished fourth, he said, we need three big signings, and if we do that, then I can fight for the title.
And yeah.
Club saying, well, we can't do that, financial fair play. And he's like, right, I'm off. And people made it seem as if, well, Gattuso was sacked. Well, no. The club had to deal in a certain financial reality. So right now, They're definitely in a good place, but yeah, I think the single biggest thing is going to be how do you deal with Ibra going forward? How do you wean yourself off of Ibra?
And Donnarumma, you mentioned the contract. I mean, you can't let him go for free, right? This is not. There's a risk that happens, but that would be crazy.
It's like the Aubameyang situation or like any kind of expiring thing. The difference with Donnarumma is that, you know, he's still super young. He's 21, 22 years old. He's probably played like 200 games for Milan. It's crazy. He's been a starter since he was 16. And the problem is he's on an enormous money already.
Yeah.
I mean, he makes, I think I'm right in saying he might be the third highest paid keeper in the world now after Neuer and De Gea. But, I mean, he's right up there.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you ask yourself, okay, every time, you know, you renew a contract, you get a bump, especially when your agent is Mino Raiola. Yeah. If you're Milan, you go to him and you say, Gigio, we can't give you more money. It's not realistic, you know. I think from Milan's perspective, they're going to look around Europe and say, okay, who's going to pay him more than what we're willing to offer him?
Even on a free.
Even on a free transfer,
with a
right?
Big signing on fee.
Because, and this is where it works, this is a bit like the De Gea argument and why it's still there. You know, you figure, you know, Real Madrid have their keeper. Barcelona have their keeper. You know, Manchester City have their keeper. Yeah. Liverpool have their keeper. United have a keeper.
Yeah, they have their keeper.
But they have two keepers because they have Henderson as well. I mean, you know, unless
Bayern Munich, PSG,
unless there's a scenario where Edouard Mundy turns out to be terrible, and Chelsea bite the bullet and decide to throw more money, you know, more good money after bad, and say, "All right, let's move for him." I just don't see too many other clubs that would go and do this, or, you know, unless he decides to turn into Judas Iscariot and go sign for Juve on a free. I don't even want to say
Inter
that.
Or Inter to replace Handanovic.
Oh my God, can you imagine that?
Getting older, obviously.
Yeah, no, I don't think that's going to happen. But they do need to monitor the situation, and it's what makes it so difficult, you know, because you're dealing with a guy like Mino who, I'm not saying I don't believe Mino Raiola is the devil. I think he looks out for his clients first
and
foremost.
Yeah.
He very rarely loses clients. So obviously he's, from his perspective, he's doing the right thing. For me, the right thing is extend.
Yeah.
You know, and extend without a bump, because right now is not the time for a bump.
No, yeah, yeah.
But time will tell. But yeah, he's critical to this team. And while so much of the focus, I think, is on Ibra, I think we need to highlight, I'd like to highlight three other players. Bennacer, who's
amazing.
Been phenomenal.
And again, who's very good at Empoli, but it's gone to another level now.
He's gone to another level. I think there's probably, I mean, look, this predates the current crop at Arsenal, but how he was at Arsenal.
Oh, come on, don't give me that.
No, no, I do want.
He was so young, Gab. He was so young. It was just not his time. He was so young. But I remember when
they sent him on loan to Arles, is it?
Yeah.
Where Van Gogh used to paint. Yeah. And then it's kind of like the contract. I mean, I know, look, the people who did that, this was before Mertesacker. This was before Edu.
It's just.
Somebody, this is before Raul, your buddy Raul Sanjehi as well. This one's on Arsene and whoever was in charge at the time.
Don't forget, he was only 17. What, how, you know, you can't wait. Sometimes you cannot wait 3 years until the guy's got 4 years until the guy is ready to make that step up, right? You can't send him on loan all those years either. Do you see what
Let
I mean?
Let me put it
this way. Snabry, there's plenty of other... in many clubs, there's other examples.
We were talking earlier about how, you know, depending on the opposition, it's Partey and Xhaka, Partey and Ceballos, Partey and Elneny. All three solutions are
suboptimal. Are you going to tell me, imagine Benacer? There.
Can you
call? You're breaking my heart.
Wouldn't that be much easier?
You're breaking my heart.
We're not picking. I'm not picking on Arsenal. Every club has got stories like that.
But you're right. Benacer is just.
Romagnoli is a guy who sometimes makes mistakes, made a mistake on the penalty, but he is a leader. He is a heartbeat. I think it's really important that continues. And the third one is Donnarumma. I mean, I think you have that. People talk about that spine thing, but that is what you build around. So far, so good. But it's a long season in Italy.
Yeah.
There's a lot of competitive teams. We'll see how things turn out. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Gab. Just go to Indeed.com/Gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Enough Milan. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Spurs beat Brighton, and guess what? They're up to second in the table. Jules, Jose Mourinho's proving some doubters wrong. Are you impressed?
Impressed, I'm not sure that's the word, but they're certainly doing
second
a really good
in the table.
I know it's good, but I remember after the restart writing a piece for the ESPN website saying that they were far more pragmatic. You could see what he was trying to do, especially with Kane and Son. They're doing that. And they find a way of winning against Brighton where they didn't really play well, didn't create much either, and yet they still won thanks to Gareth Bale. So even that is coming into place. So
it's knew the Welsh guy would get some love from you.
Yeah, of course. Liverpool find an unlikely hero in Jadon Shaqiri to overcome West Ham 2-1. Gab, is tough going, but they're on top.
Yeah, they're on top. They, I think it's four games in a row now where we've had these, what Jurgen Klopp calls dirty wins.
Yeah.
Like, it was difficult because West Ham defended well. They defended numbers. West Ham without Michael Antonio. And Liverpool eventually finding a way through. I like it when guys like Shaqiri, who seem to be a forgotten man, gets in there. Team, you know, he combined very well with Diogo Jota to set up that goal. Are there concerns? Yes.
Defensively.
There's defensive concerns. You know, I like the Nat Phillips idea. He can't play in the Champions League. He's not even registered for that. But look, if you can, they're top of the table, right? So hunker down, wait for better times, and you're still looking down upon everybody else.
I agree.
Real Madrid's record signing, Eden Hazard, scores his first goal in more than a year as they beat Huesca 4-1, which incidentally is also his second goal ever for Real Madrid. Jules, I know it's a Wenger-esque cliche to say that he's like a new signing, but kind of is, right?
It is, completely. I mean, let's see how fit he stays and for how long. But he looked sharp. His understanding with Benzema, I thought, was very good again. The linker play together was great. And this is so good for Real Madrid. I think, you know, Vinicius has some talent. Rodrigo has some talent. It's not the same than when Hazard is there. And if they can keep him fit with that kind of attitude, level, motivation, everything you want, he's going to be a great asset for that team, there's no doubt.
And you can play an extra midfielder and play a front two with Benzema, which I think is pretty big as well.
And it's probably the idea as well. Barcelona dropped points again, this time held by Alaves 1-1 after a horrendous blunder by Neto in goal. At least my boy Griezmann scored, though.
Yeah, and look, everybody's so negative because I think, what is it? It's like 2 points out of 12 in their last four Liga games. Yeah. But you know what? That's not how football works, right? And you can blame Bartomeu and the hangover for this, but the reality sandwiched in between was a very impressive win against Juventus. I thought Barcelona actually played really well in this game.
The second half.
They created a ton of chances. They took a ton of shots. It was a big, big screw-up from Neto, and I think it was Longley who gave him the ball. I know.
Pique, sorry.
Mm. Right now, because we don't want to pick on Gerard Pique because he's St. Gerard. Yeah, so let's blame the French guy who got stuck off.
Of course.
But there are little baby steps of progress here. I feel weird. We've praised Koeman and Mourinho in the same show.
I know, but why did Koeman change? You know, Busquets, Pjanic started against Juventus. We said how good that was, and then you put him back on the bench 3 days later. Why? And then you bring him on at halftime, and, oh, it's the best half that you had.
See, you still can't help yourself.
Nah,
you got to hate on Ronald.
Busquets.
Cristiano recovers from COVID, comes off the bench and scores twice as Juventus beat Spezia 4-1. And Morata scores a goal that isn't ruled outside. Hey! Jules, they needed Cristiano, yeah?
Yeah, they did, because they were not playing well until he came on at 1-1. He scored 3 minutes later. You could see that something changed when he got on anyway, when he came on. So they need him. It was 4 games without him, 2 in the league, 2 in the Champions League. We've seen against Barcelona without him, you know, where it was. But yeah, I thought his entrance was brilliant. Rabiot as well coming on made a big difference. And Morata, as you said, already his link-up play with Cristiano on Cristiano's first goal, for example, was brilliant.
So, well, easier to link up with Cristiano than with Dybala, who was terrible.
Dybala was terrible. Incredible. No Lukaku for Inter, and they held 2-2 by Parma. And my boy Gervinho, who scored a wonderful, I mean, 2 goals, but the first one especially is brilliant. Gabi Inter complained about VAR, not assigning a penalty, but ultimately it's groundhog day, right? It's always the same.
Yeah, it kind of is. It's like all of a sudden, always, you know, Lukaku's not there. Look, Inter still created enough chances to win this game.
Yeah.
Let's be clear. They should have had that penalty on VAR. By the way, small credit. Say our head of referees, Nicola Rizzoli. I like the fact his greater openness. He's come out and said, yeah, the referee, who, by the way, shouldn't have even been on the pitch, but it's like the referee who was assigned to the game, got himself injured, Pairetto, and so this guy, Piccinini, came on, steps on the pitch, whatever, screws it up, VAR doesn't intervene. Who knows what happened there?
Yeah.
But it's good that he comes out and he starts admitting mistakes. We don't have this blue wall of silence that we sometimes have, this omerta that we sometimes have with referees,
definitely.
And still have in other countries, by the way. Issue with Inter is, if Lukaku's not there, they lose all the patterns of play. It all comes down to individuals. There was no Alexis Sanchez either.
Yeah.
Man, if Lukaku's out, how about you play the guy who is most like Lukaku? Play Pinamonti.
Yeah.
He's a kid. He's a youngster. If he can't get it into games like these, when does this guy get
That's
to play?
True.
Instead, he came on as a sub. More work to do for Inter, as ever.
Yeah.
Borussia Dortmund beat Arminia Bielefeld 2-0. By the way, read Tom Hamilton and Stefan Ursfeld. They had a great feature on Bielefeld, the town that does not exist. And with no Erling Haaland, it's up to Mats Hummels to score goals. Jules, we hope Hummels and Holland are back for Der Klassiker next Saturday. But how do they look otherwise?
Yeah, hopefully they will be back. They should be back. It was, again, I mean, they won and they created enough chances to win by more. But I thought it was a bit laboured. I think that's the right word.
Marco Reus is not your centre forward.
No, it's not. And we know that. And we've mentioned that before. And Lucien is not listening to what we're saying. But by the way, the highlight was that outside of his right foot pass from Hummels, the cross for Sancho's header was just sublime. And let's hope that they have all those players back to give a proper contest to Bayern next week. Hansi Flick said Bayern, talking about Bayern, said Bayern 2-1 win over Köln was laboured, a bit like Dortmund. Gab, considering he didn't start Lewandowski, Coman, Goretzka, Lucas Hernandez, and whoever else, maybe that's understandable, right?
Yeah, you could add Alphonso Davies and David Alaba to that list as well. You had your boy Bounassar playing left back, Pavard at right back.
Choupo.
Look, right around Halloween, Eric Choupo-Moting.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, the fact that those guys played, Roca came on as well. Basically, all these new, Douglas Costa came on, all the new guys that we said that they needed to sign, they all came on, they played. Bayern still got the win. They ate up minutes. I think this is going to pay dividends down the road. That's why they're there. I got absolutely no problem with any of this. Manchester City beat Sheffield United 1-0. Jules, for the first time in the Pep Guardiola era, they've scored no more than one goal in their last four league games. Pep himself says 9 goals from 6 games isn't enough. Is it all down to the fact that Aguero and Gabriel Jesus are out?
It's not. I would like to say that it is, but it's not. I mean, Ferran Torres is a really good young player, but as a
force number nine,
he works against Marseille. It doesn't work all the time, you know? And I just think it's the lack of fluidity that we mentioned before, the lack of creativity. Kevin De Bruyne, who I don't think he's fully fit either, can't do everything. And I just think the fullbacks don't bring as much as before. There's just not that mobility that there was, the movement that there was before in previous seasons under Pep Guardiola. And for me, even if they're wasteful in front of goals, it's still the main issue.
The movement is often dictated by your front man. And when you have a centre forward who's not a centre forward, you're going to have different movements. I think they are kind of paying a price for that.
Yeah, they are, certainly. Frank Lampard mixed it up as Chelsea win 3-0 against Burnley. There was no Kovacic, no Jorginho. Kante midfield with Mount and Kai Havertz. Gab, are we going to see this again?
Yeah, I think you might see it again if they played Burnley again.
Every week?
Like eight people in the six-yard box.
Yeah.
I think it's a plan B. I don't think it's sustainable playing Havertz and Mount, you know, as part of your three in midfield. You can't do this against a better team. Wouldn't be surprised if we see Jorginho or Kovacic back.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
No Neymar, no problem, as Paris Saint-Germain roll over Nantes with 3 second-half goals. Jules, it took a while to get going.
They worked for an hour, well, at least for the first half, Gab. It was just not pretty, as you said. I'm not sure if they really wanted to play that game, to be fair, between two Champions League matches. But hey, in the end, they won. Kylian Mbappé was much better in the second half than he was in the first half. He got told off at halftime by the referee. He came back into the tunnel saying, referee, we have meetings with you and then you don't give penalties like the one on me. He thought there was a blatant penalty in the first half. So the referee called him in his office or dressing room, I don't know how you say.
I love that. That's kind of like in school when you get called into the principal's office.
And then, like by magic, he was much better in the second half and was decisive, you know.
That's pretty sweet. And Neymar, what's the deal? He's back, yeah? For the Champions League?
No, he won't be back. He will only be back after the international break. Won't play with Brazil. It's a groin injury and will miss the Leipzig game at the weekend. Huge game in midweek.
He can do some PlayStation with Fabinho.
Exactly. Leipzig lose top spot in the Bundesliga as they're beaten by Gladbach 1-0. Gab, it's a bit cruel on Nagelsmann considering who the goal scorer was.
Yeah, so this story has kind of taken over the fact that Leipzig, who were the top of the table, they got beat. Gladbach are a good team. Two phenomenal young managers in Marco Rose, obviously, and Nagelsmann. He played the only living Sorloth in captivity up front alongside Poulsen, which I thought was a look we'd never seen before from him. But that's how Nagelsmann rolls. He always switches things around.
Didn't really work, though.
It didn't really work. The difference, though, and this was a story which I really got excited about, was that the goal scorer was Hannes Wolf. And now, this guy's got a funny story because Wolf is Austrian. He came through the ranks at Salzburg. Mm-hmm. Or I'm going to guess he came through the ranks somewhere else. And then Salzburg, with all that fizzy drink money, bought him. But anyway, he was a rising star at Salzburg 2 years ago. So obviously, what does the RB group do? Like, okay, you graduated Salzburg. You get to go play for Leipzig, who we have nothing to do with. Entirely unrelated.
No links.
I didn't get to Leipzig, and for whatever reason, Nagelsmann doesn't like him
at all.
Zero starts last year, came off the bench 5 times in the Bundesliga. Made some poor choices, like he, remember, what's his name? The Turkish chef with the gold steak in Frank Ribery.
Yeah,
that's right, Salt Bay. Or
Salt Bay, yeah.
That's not actually, his name is Nusrat.
Nusrat,
there you go. So eventually, Nagelsmann's like, I have no use for you. Go somewhere else. Sends him on loan. Mönchengladbach. Marco Rose says, "Yeah, I will take him because, of course, Marco Rose worked with him in Salzburg, and I think there's a buyback clause already arranged. I don't think he's ever going back to Leipzig."
And like in the Premier League, you can play against your parent club in the
Bundesliga. Yeah, that's right. You know, Premier League fanboys who are amazed by this. Yeah. Yes, in grown-up countries. There's no problem with it. I mean, you can put in a specific clause, but
yeah.
It's seen as slightly fugazi, slightly off-brand to go and do that, you know. But, yeah, good story. Although I don't think Leipzig are out of the title race at all, do you?
Definitely not. No, but they need their goal scorers, Poulsen, Solorth, or whoever from midfield, start scoring more, though.
João Félix turns on the style, scores twice in Luis Suarez's absence, and propels Atletico Madrid to a 3-1 win over Osasuna. Jules, huge price tag. First season, up and down, he's young. He's still only 20 years old. Is this the year he turns a corner? And if he does, if he lives up to his price tag, Atletico are serious, yeah?
Yeah, I think it's two games now. The one against Salzburg in the Champions League.
He
scored twice. We said this could be a turning point for his season and his career at Atletico. And then again, he confirmed this weekend. He was not just the two goals, but I thought his all-around game performance was fantastic. I mean, he's so talented, clearly. He had a bit of bad luck with injury. You're right, in his first season, a bit up and down. I think the team was a bit up and down as well.
Yeah.
And now, whether he plays up front with Luis Suarez, whether he plays with someone else, it's clearly clicking now. And I just think that they look really good.
Correa the weekend, but when you watch him play, he is such a natural footballer. It's pretty. He completely looks the part.
All the first touches, all the way he plays between the line, he finds the space. Everything. He's so intelligent. He's just a joy to watch. Really is. Four wins in a row for Real Sociedad now, who stayed top of La Liga with a 4-1 win against Celta Vigo. As David Silva and William Jose scored their first goals of the season. Gab, they're for real, aren't they?
Yeah, they're on a tremendous run. Now, Real Madrid obviously have played one fewer game, but yeah. They're right up there. We saw this last season. You know, in the end, it's David Silva for Martin Odegaard, players, but there's a lot of depth on this team beyond them, you know, whether it's Oyarzabal, whether it's William Jose.
Yeah, Porto.
Porto, of course, as well, has come up big. They're good at the back, too, I think. So, they're up there. And I think it's only good for football. And in this weird season that we're experiencing, why not Real Sociedad?
Yeah, why not?
Our boy, Victor Osimhen, squanders chances. And somehow, Sassuolo beat Napoli 2-0. Despite not having two of their stellar front three, Ciccio Caputo and Mimmo Berardi, both out. Jules, Napoli threw this away, but Sassuolo, again, the story, second in the table.
Second in the table, and De Zerbi doing an incredible job, really. And you know what, I like the fact, okay, they can play that game another 9 times and they will lose 9 times. But they went there, played their game. You know, I just thought Locatelli in midfield was great. I thought Maxim Lopez, who came from Marseille in the summer, was good.
Yeah, is he one of yours, Maxim Lopez?
No, he's from Marseille. I still like him, but he's not like if he was from Paris, you know. But still, and they went there and played their game. And yeah, of course, they play their game and they concede chances. They will always do. But they score. I thought they were bold on the ball. They were decent. And Napoli, I think maybe playing Thursday, Sunday at times, maybe take a toll on them. But it's great.
I don't think Napoli played badly.
No,
in the end, people are going to freak out over the result. But I think the chances were there, and this is the way for Napoli to go.
Yeah, definitely. Two defeats in a row now for Everton and your boy Carlo Ancelotti, who lose at Newcastle 2-1. First time, I think, since 2014 that he loses two in a row. Don't roll your eyes, it's true. Is the party over now? Or are you going to find some excuses?
Well, so the obvious excuse is that since 2014 or whatever date that you pulled out, in those years, he was working for Real Madrid, Paris Saint-Germain, and Napoli.
No, not Paris Saint-Germain.
Okay, but right, Real Madrid, Napoli. Was it Bayern in there too?
And Bayern in there, yeah.
So, you know, those are teams that generally don't lose two games in a row.
But still.
Now he's playing for Everton, who probably more frequently lose two games in a row. I think it's pretty simple. There's a Lucadine suspended.
Yeah.
Richarlison, I assume, suspended. Yeah. Otherwise, no James.
Yeah.
No Coleman. No Holgate and Davies, who I know are what they are, but at least they might have come on and played. Everton played the, should we call it the 7-2-1 formation?
I know, but why did you play three defensive midfielders? Why did you play Alain Ducouré and Fabian Delph? I don't know, put Iwobi there. Put Bernard there.
Did you see Iwobi when he came on?
I know, but still. I saw the lineup and I saw the big, and I was like, why you be so cautious? Away at Newcastle, who are not good.
I don't think he's just saying being cautious. I think he probably thought that Newcastle aren't good. They're going to sit and try to hit on the counter, and it's going to be one of those games where you've got the ball all the time and you rely on Sigurdsson to deliver.
I think
whatever.
Wrong.
Southampton win a wild one over Villa, 4-3. They're up to third in the table. But Jules, since you love your Techers, time to celebrate James Ward-Prowse's long-range free-kick heroics.
Great free-kick taker. We saw him on the assist for Vestergaard, set pieces, a specialist. Great free-kicks as well, two of them. The second one, especially, even closer to the goal. But Tyrone Mings, please, if you're in the wall, jump. You're not supposed to not jump in the wall. You know, you have to jump. And maybe had you jumped on the second one, it wouldn't have gone in. Let's detour to the Scottish second division. I can't believe I'm asking you this question. Inverness Caledonian Thistle beat Arbroath 3-1. But Gab, you were impressed with the camera work in this game.
Yeah, I tweeted this out because this really, really struck me. Now, for those who don't know, at that level, it's a second tier of Scottish football. The games are streamed live on television. You pay £10 for the pleasure of watching. But I guess they can't afford cameramen. So, like, they have this AI camera. This is the sort of big shot, the wide shot, that kind of is designed to track the ball. Now, and it kind of moves around the pitch following the ball. The problem is the referee's assistant, the linesman in that game, has a shiny, bald head. And I tweet out the video of this because it's pretty remarkable. At some point, the camera just starts following the assistant rather than the ball.
Thinking the
man's head was the ball. Yeah, I mean, wearing a cap or something might solve that next time. Right, that's all we've got time for today. Thanks so much for joining us. Jules, should we come back Thursday and do this again?
Let's do that.
All right, man. Till then, love the game, love yourself, love your neighbor.
Real quick, what's the easiest choice you can make? Window seat over middle? Taco Tuesday over salad? What about selling with Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjules, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjules now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/gabjules.